Now, get ready for Uncensored Sports Madness. It's Dave in the City on Lux of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Lux of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play.
And it comes time. We know how Lincoln dies. You know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they are showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic chanting USA.
Actually, this Paul Davis a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
No one puts the WGCs in a Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major prank, so chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot offer, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Lux of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Wednesday show, coming to you live from Santa Monica tonight, where this town is a buzzing. Good to have you with us on a Wednesday, looking at the action tonight in the Midwest and looking at the triumph here on the West. We'll cover that to start the show. Then we are joined by Lou in Hoboken to talk about the upcoming Cowboys-Giants matchup this weekend, among other things in the NFL. It's a big weekend. A lot of playoff seeds could be decided here or further decided with the help of the Cowboys and the Giants. The Giants, remarkably, are still in the playoff hunt despite starting 0-6, but they haven't looked too impressive doing so. However, the Cowboys have not looked too impressive either, so this is definitely going to be a very intriguing matchup in the Meadowlands. So we'll get into that at quarter after. Then, at 10:40 in the East, 7:40 out West, we'll look at the story with Tyler's Investments. And a little bit of a twist to the format this week. We're going to have the challengers come on first, including some written picks from Ron in New Jersey, and verbal picks from John in Connecticut, Andy in Seattle, and Say Hello to Otis. Then Tyler will come on right after that to give us his investments of the week. For last week, basically what happened was Tyler went 1-3, whereas everybody else went either 2-2 or 2-1-1. So clearly the pressure is on the namesake of the spot, Tyler, to make this happen. So we'll see what happens at the end of the hour. Then in hour two, Kevin on the Cape and random questions in the 11 o'clock hour or the 8 o'clock hour out West. So big show tonight. We start with the Men of Troy. Now, I could put some music behind this. Not going to. I think the moment speaks for itself. USC is back. And when you talk about a team that reaches relevance again, as Brent Musburger opined at the end of the game on Saturday night, you look at a team that was down to nothing when the season began. In its most embarrassing moment, losing at home to Washington State and then getting blown out by Arizona State, ushering Lane Kiffin out the door. Filling in his spot is a guy named Coach Ed Orgeron. And he has a funny voice and a funny-looking guy. And he definitely was a gregarious person and a human being. Definitely a good rah-rah guy, but nobody really took him that seriously when he took over. We're like, all right, we'll round it out and see if he can get a couple of W's here with this particular portion of the year. Well, he went on to go 6-0 in Pac-12 competition going into tonight's game into Saturday's game against Stanford. And suddenly, you're looking at a situation where you had a showdown suddenly between the North and the South in the Pac-12. Well, I think if anybody was surprised to see this game have any kind of significance, it was the people here in town, in L.A., at the Coliseum, in the land of Troy, USC itself. I mean, everybody else was as surprised as anybody else around the country that they got this good. The only loss that they had in Coach O's tenure up to that point, was the game at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's defense is pretty good. And in response to my friend Mike in North Jersey, I should add that Mark McKee-Lee did not play the game. He did not play. I should have them know. I know that Notre Dame didn't have their quarterback, but come on. They didn't really have a quarterback to begin with. But McKee-Lee being out for the game was significant in that particular affair. But a win's a win for Notre Dame, and they really did a good job winning that game. And so you go from there. But the thing is, it was interesting to see how good they had been getting to this game with Stanford. So with the day approaching, I was alerted to the fact by my friend Andy in Seattle that College Game Day thought enough of the game to come out here to town in Los Angeles. So I thought about it, and I said to my buddies, all right, why don't I go out and check out this matchup, see how it goes. Go to College Game Day early in the morning and see what the story was behind it. And as a little bit of a kick, I decided to go in my gorilla costume just to, you know, see what the reaction would be from everybody. So I went. It was really early in the morning because I wanted to make sure I had a good spot so that I had an opportunity to get on camera so my buddies could see me on TV and my family too. And I went over there, and right away they spotted the costume there, and you know, two producers came over and like, are you gonna wear that on the show? And I'm like, and then they said, what's it for? And then what's it for? Well, I mean, I didn't have an answer, so I said, well, no reason. And they said back to me, well, we're gonna have to talk this one over. So for the moment, they let me sit in the bleacher section, which is not right at the front, but it was elevated enough so you could see just about everything. You could see the pit, you could see all the people in the middle, you could see the side stage, you could see the main stage, you could see everything. You could see the Jumbotron right in front, and so everything looked like a good vantage point. And I was looking at it, and I'm like, wait, look at this. I've got a camera that's facing me, actually, the way that that's facing me. Whenever they go to Desmond Howard, I'm like, ooh, I might actually be on TV here. So I was excited about the whole thing. We're getting closer to 6 o'clock in the morning, which is what time College Game Day starts on the West Coast. That's very early. I had to leave at 4 a.m. in the morning from my apartment just to have an opportunity at this. And miraculously, I found a parking space in the morning. So I went over here, and I'm talking to these producer guys and sponsors and what have you. They're all worried about this gorilla costume. They have no idea what it is. So I'm like, all right, well, no problem. I'll just hang out and we'll see what happens. So I'm chilling. A bunch of guys with fake plastic axes start gathering around behind me in what they call the Coke Zero section. It's sponsored by Coca-Cola. And this grandstand, it's a relatively new addition to the program. Really great addition, though. I mean, it's sort of like it's almost like a virtual luxury box for the game. For the game day program, because you can see everything, but yet it's a comfortable situation. So it was really nice. So I was hanging out there. But then about 10 minutes before airtime, one of the guys called me down and said, we have to pull you aside for a moment. You know, that's like the feeling that you get, you know, when people say, oh, you're going to be in trouble. The principal wants to talk to you. You know, I had that sort of feeling. And surely enough, I went down there and I was confronted by two producers. I think a couple of sponsor guys, a cop, and then the USC director of security. They all went up to me and it's like, I'm afraid we cannot let you use this costume on the air. And I was disappointed. And I think it was visible how disappointed I was. And I'm like, they wouldn't let me wear any of it. They wouldn't even let me wear the robe. They're like, we have to ask you to take it all off. And we will keep the costume for you. You get to have it back, but you just can't use it on the program. And I felt kind of sad about that. So I had to take it all off. And fortunately for me, I brought it in a bag. So I brought a bag just to carry it around, like, after the show. But I ended up using it to pack the whole thing. So I just gave it to them, like, okay. So they just tucked it away safely underneath the stands. And then I had to go back to the seat where I was, like, in the front row of the grandstand. So I was a little dejected, and I thought, you know, that's, I'm not, you know, I considered just leaving altogether. Like, you know what? I mean, that kind of defeats the purpose. I wanted to see what it would look like if they saw a gorilla on TV. And I'm like, nobody else is allowed to wear costumes either, so I guess that part was, at least they were consistent about it, so I'm not really, I didn't take it too personally, but I just thought it was funny how that was a big motivation for going, and I didn't get a chance to execute that to its conclusion. So I was very disappointed. I was looking, sitting there, and like, well, I guess we'll watch this anyway for a little while, and maybe after about an hour I'll leave. But then what happened, what was interesting, one of the guys from either the sponsorship tent or the producers or what have you, because they had ESPN stuff on too, so I think they were producers, they came over and they said, listen, look, we're really sorry we took your costume. We'll give you something at the end of the show. We will hook you up, and so just sit tight, and we'll set you up in a little bit. So, all right. I mean, I guess we can hang out and just see what this is all about. So, I completed the session, and the show was started and went on air. It was live. Everybody was there. You know, all the guys. Fowler, Corso, Howard, and Herb Street. They were all there. All the same guys. You had Tom Rinaldi standing in off to the side, and you had Paul Feinbaum with the SEC. It was a good show. It was a good show. They broke down all the games. It was just like every other show they've ever done on College Game Day. They painted the crowd, checked out the signs. Obviously, some terrific signs. I think two of our favorite signs. One of them said, "Who's Brent got in the game?" I think he had to see. If you listened to his enthusiasm on the telecast on Saturday, I think it was pretty clear. But the other one was Lane Kiffin owns a Blockbuster, which both went kaput. So that was pretty awesome. Pretty awesome signage at SC campus on McCarthy Quad on Saturday. So I checked out the whole thing. Then towards the end of the show, I noticed I was getting on TV every time they panned to Desmond Howard. So I started busting out some moves, just some wacky dances, and then did the robot at the end, and one of my friends caught that on TV and put it on YouTube, and the YouTube video is called Vid Doing Vid, or I think Vid is Vid, or Vid as Vid, yeah, something like that, I forget. It may be hard to find, because VID can search to a lot of different things on YouTube, but regardless, I posted it on the Facebook, facebook.com/DaveInTheCity, if you want to look for it. And it's a hoot, guys. If you ever get a chance to check it out, or if you have your College Game Day recorded, definitely check it out, because it's pretty funny. But anyway, I was just busting out these moves, and everybody was just dying laughing. And that was fun. I had a good time. And the show was good, and it was a festive crowd. And then at the end, the producer came over, and he said, all right, well, I'm really, really sorry about what happened. Here you go. And what he gave me was two gift certificate cards to Buffalo Wild Wings. But get this, it wasn't just any denomination. He gave me, I went home after the fact and I looked up the amount. It was $50 a piece. I got $100 in Buffalo Wild Wings money as an apology for what happens. And boy, I tell you what, that was really, really generous. I did not expect that by any means. And I just want to thank everybody at ESPN and Coca-Cola for being so kind. I mean, they did a great job. It's a class act the whole way. Absolutely did not expect that kind of generosity. I honestly, thank you. It was really, really a lot of fun. And I'm glad, I appreciate that you care that much about your fans. It really, really means a lot. I mean, you didn't have to. I mean, even if you gave me like 10 bucks, it would have been pretty generous, but 100, oh my god, that is pretty awesome. So thank you very much. Another thank you to Buffalo Wild Wings too, because I'm pretty sure they're a sponsor of some element of ESPN college football. So this is not turning into a commercial for all three companies, but seriously, I think I'm gonna go drink a Coke right now to commemorate that occasion. So while we do that, well, I'll go get the Coca-Cola. Let's talk about the game. So I went home. I didn't hang around SC the whole day. That would have been impossible. I mean, I was there since from 4:30 till 9:30. I would have run out of things to do if I hung around there the whole time. And I didn't have a ticket to the game, so I just went home. Took a nap. I was tired. I was really tired. But I watched some other college football. Obviously, great games all the way around. Then the game approached, and here it is. And I had a good feeling about this game. USC going against Stanford looked like a good matchup, because I felt like SC's defense between the tackles is really strong, really, really good defense. And the same thing applied to Stanford. They were roughing up UCLA. They were roughing up Oregon. I mean, these guys really know how to bring pressure. So I said, well, I think they've got a chance. I think this game's going to be pretty close. And if you think about how the games between them went over the last few years, I think that proof bears itself out. I mean, these games were all close. So I said, why not? I mean, SC's going to be in this game. They're going to have a chance to win it. Let's see what happens. And first part of the game, I think SC scored on their first two possessions. It was looking really, really good. I mean, we all were doing the dance here in L.A. But then Stanford got back into it with the help of Kevin Hogan and Tyler Gaffney. I mean, they both were just dominating the game at the line of scrimmage in particular, especially in the second half. They were really, really running the ball on USC. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I know I was talking about how great the strength was between the tackles, but, man, I think it just goes to show you, A, how great the offensive line for Stanford is, and B, Gaffney just having an unbelievable season. He had 2 touchdowns and over 100 yards on the night in a low-scoring game, which we'll get to the final score in a minute. But, I mean, this was just such a good game. I mean, it was tight. I don't think anybody led by more than 7 the whole game. I don't think so. I mean, it was just intense. And so it really looked like in the fourth quarter, Stanford was going to put this thing away for good. And that was going to be the end of the season for USC. We thought that was it. We said, well, Stanford has been really, really killing it. They've been pounding it between the tackles, pounding the ball, just taking first down after first down. And then suddenly there was a lapse as the game was nearing its conclusion. And Montgomery, who was one of the best receivers for Stanford, was dropping passes where normally he had been catching them. It really was looking kind of dire, actually, for the Trojans. But then, amazingly, the defense was just doing just enough to stay in the game. And then Montgomery was dropping those passes. And as Stanford mounted a 70-plus yard drive to ice the game, even a field goal at this point would have iced the game, because I think they were up, what was the score? I think the game was tied at 17, something like that. Yeah, the game might have been tied at 17, and even a field goal would have probably done it in, because there was like 3 minutes to go in the game, and it really looked like that was going to be that. But then, inexplicably, SC starts to get across the line of scrimmage defensively. They go after Hogan. He throws an off-balance pass, and it's Deion Bailey who intercepts it to save the game. I mean, just like that, you go from Stanford perhaps winning it outright or getting a touchdown or even a field goal, which probably would have been enough, to seeing SC driving for the win. So a couple of first downs later, they're faced with a 4th-and-2 in a little bit of Stanford territory, just past the 50. 4th-and-2, but not really enough for a field goal. So it was a very tough decision. You know, it's between the 50 and the 40. It's like what I call the gray zone. It's really like between the 40 and the 30. I call that the gray zone because it's not close enough for a field goal, but it's not far enough away to make it an obvious punt attempt. Anyway, 4th-and-2 in this gray area, and pretty much the game on the line. You're down to the last 2 minutes, and you know a lot of people are thinking, well, what are they going to do here? I mean, is it safe to go for it now? If you miss, then Stanford's basically going to have the ball at midfield, and the tie game, it's basically over. But the way I looked at it, I said, even before they made the decision, I said, this game would have been over anyway. The way that they were killing the Trojans with the running attack, it didn't matter to me. I said, I don't think you want to give Stanford the ball in a tie game like that, the way things were going. You might as well go for the win here, because it might have been the only shot to score. So Coach Orgeron felt the same way. They called the timeout, and then they went for it in 4th-and-2, and it wasn't easy. It was a slant pattern, and Kessler got it across. I think Nelson Aguilar caught it on the other end. I'm not sure. And that extended the game even further. And another couple of runs. And the Trojans were really struggling to run the ball all night, too. That's the other half of this. I mean, they could not run the ball. They could not get the ball more than like 2 or 3 yards at a time. if they were lucky. Usually they were losing yards. I mean, at one point in the game, they had like 8 rushing yards the whole game. And I don't even think they're counting the negative yards from sacks and tackles behind the line of scrimmage and all that. This is without all those subtractions. So it was brutal. But they got enough. And then they had those penalties, which just killed them because it turned the field goal attempt from an easy field goal to a very, very iffy one. And if you know a guy named Andre Hadary, he has been fighting tough times in the last year or so with field goal attempts. Even like 30-yard attempts are terrible for him. He was the most unreliable kicker in the Pac-12 easily. He's terrible. But leave it to the Trojans and their spirit or what have you. They decided to rest it on his foot anyway. And I mean, I'm sure that's tremendous confidence on his part. Oh, I mean, they trust me to kick the ball after all this. I mean, he must have felt pretty happy about that and very, very relieved to know that they had that he had their confidence. So it was about a 48-yard attempt. Take it in from the hash. Now, it was about, I think, 26 seconds left in regulation. And so this is pretty much the game. The game is on the line, and you give it to the most unreliable kicker in the Pac-12 to win probably the biggest game that SC has played in at least 4 years. And this dude, despite all of his foibles and troubles, gets the ball and drills it down the middle. He drills it down the middle. It's amazing that he could get that together in the biggest kick of his career up to date. I mean, he might have had a pretty big one when he played Ohio State. I think that he was on that team back then. But, my goodness, that was that was incredible. I mean, a lot of redemption was in play for SC on Saturday night. And after that go-ahead field goal, which put the Trojans up 20-17, the Trojans were able to do just enough to hang on and keep. Because Stanford ran a couple more plays, and they tried some laterals at the end, and it wasn't enough. And SC won it, held on 20-17, beating Stanford a week after Stanford clipped number two Oregon at Palo Alto 1 week prior. So to go from that to losing to SC, definitely a change for the Cardinal. But for USC, to this point, the biggest win of the season. I mean, this is a signature win for them. So much so that the fans stormed the field. I mean, and seriously, I have never, in 30 years of watching them play, I've only started following them since 99, but I have never seen them rush the field in football. Never! I mean, this was definitely a sign of change, and it was truly a sight to see all the fans this excited. And I really wanted to go out and party after the game, but remember, I had been up since 4, so I had no shot. I just died. I just went to sleep shortly after the game. But it was still such an amazing moment for the Trojan Nation and the Trojan faithful. So I want to extend my congratulations to USC and Coach Orgeron. And, it's funny. All these wins that he's getting is actually creating a bigger problem for SC administrative-wise. Because now people are like, well, are you going to keep the guy? What do you do? I mean, it's like he's making a really good case to sign on as a permanent coach. Personally, I think even with all of this, I really don't think it would be a wise move to keep him as a full-time coach. I mean, he's a great motivator and recruiter, but is he a good coach? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, we really don't have a read on that. Personally, I'm not one to buy into that idea, and so I think it would be wise to find a way to accept him and keep him into the program and go after an experienced head coach and a guy that knows his X's and O's, definitively a good coach, because SC's a big program, and you can see the talent is there. And this was proof positive that Lane Kiffin is an absolute joke. It's the same players, the same guys. And they are dominating some of these games, like the game at Oregon State, and they are coming out with emotional victories in other games that you know they would have lost if they had Kiffin still. So it is a new era for sure, and a very big crossroads for the Trojan faithful. Pat Hayden, the athletic director at SC, is going to have a tough decision to make. But I think it would be wise to maintain the course and go after a different head coach. I don't think it's that smart to just announce that Orgeron is your new guy permanently. It's just a tricky spot. But right now, he's done a tremendous job, and we thank him. And we thank the defense of SC. This is a big moment, and it's I'm glad to all be a part of it. Wow. Oh, I'm pumped, man. I am. I really am. This has been I haven't felt this kind of exhilaration from a college football game in years. It's just been terrific. I mean, we've had it pretty good at SC. Let's be honest here. I mean, have you really had more than like one or two down years? No. So honestly, it's not as if we really were fighting doldrums or anything. Let's be fair. I mean, the talent was here. I think where we're happy is because we knew that we had talent on the team. And to see it finally showing some outcomes, some kind of results, really means a lot. I think that's why I think it's really exhilarating for a lot of us, because we see, man, some of this potential is now coming to the forefront. That's really what it is. It's not so much, these long-suffering USC fans. I mean, long-suffering. I mean, they won a Rose Bowl barely like 4 years ago. It hasn't been that bad. So anyway, let's carry on. It certainly has been a great week, and it's certainly a good week for UCLA, too. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about them down the road, but they've got a big game against Arizona State, and if they can just hang on and win that game, they've got a big one against SC, and that also assumes SC beats Colorado on the road. I mean, it's not a gimme. We'll see what happens. So now we switch gears. We go from the college football scene to the NFL, and on the schedule, pretty much the only late game on Fox, Cowboys at Giants, and to help us break it all down, the resident Cowboy fan, Lou in Hoboken, joins us. Lou, welcome back to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Dave. Good to be here and to be chatting with, now a major celebrity such as yourself, now with your national TV appearance last Saturday.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I mean, I was just having my fun. It was good stuff. And now, I know you've been to game day too, right? I mean, tell us a little bit about your experiences there.
Yeah, I've been twice, actually. This year I was at the Michigan-Notre Dame game out in Ann Arbor. And game day was pretty cool. It was a really nice day. We got there shortly before the show started. We were able to get in right behind, you know, that inner fence where all the people with the VIP passes get in. Oh, by the way, I might have missed it. How did you actually get in that close? Did you just show up early?
No, I showed up incredibly early. It was unbelievable. It was like a good hour and a half before the show started. I mean,
so that's 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, 4:30 in the morning on the West Coast.
Your time, 4:30 in the morning. Good God,
it is unbelievable.
That is awesome.
Thank you, man. Thank you. But yeah. Anyway, carry on.
Yes, I was at Michigan Notre Dame game day this year, which was definitely the better of the two experiences. A lot of it comes down to, you know, the campus and how it's set up and where game day is. I was at LSU at West Virginia in 2011, uh-huh. And they had game day in this remote section of the campus. And it's a really hilly campus as it is. And when it's, you know, 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning and you're hungover from the night before and all you can think about is starting to drink again for that day, for the game that night. You know, getting over to game day, get there, and you're like, all right, well, we're nowhere close. Let's just go back. So the West Virginia game day was kind of disappointing, but the Michigan game day was great.
That's pretty sweet, man. Yeah, no, I think the crowd makes a lot of the experience, and unfortunately, we had a pretty good festive atmosphere at SC. The signs were just off the hook. I mean, did you enjoy the signage there, too?
I saw a few of them, yeah.
Yeah, you did? Okay, yeah. It was pretty funny. That's pretty good. Now, let me ask you a quick question. Now, most of these shows have Samantha Ponder in attendance. For some reason, she wasn't at our program. But did you get a chance to see her in person?
I did, but it was only for, unfortunately, a brief fleeting moment. We're actually kind of disappointed. This was the second week of the college season. She only had one segment. And other than that, we didn't see her at all. But whereas at game day the first week of the season, which I believe was at Clemson, for the Georgia-Clemson game, she was like all over the place. We're like, all right, we're going to get Sam Ponder early and often, but it wasn't the case out in Ann Arbor. She had one like pre-recorded segment, I think, with Devin Gardner, and besides that, that was it.
I'm starting to sense that she, you know, it seems, it always makes it seem like she's like on the show all the time, but I think her presence really is that sparse. I kind of felt the same way. I mean, like, I was like, when is she coming? When is she going to be on the show? And then she was not on the show at all. Yeah, we didn't see her anywhere. So,
yeah, it's unpredictable. It's a shame because she's, you know, she gets better looking every time you look at her. So, you know, definitely a shame, but, you know, that might not be here nor there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, quick question. Now, let me put you on the spot with this. If you would go with what Aaron Andrews did in these assignments on ESPN, College Game Day, sideline reporting, whatever, and what Samantha Ponder does now, I mean, how would you compare them? Is it about the same? I mean, do you favor one over the other?
It's interesting. It's almost like, would you rather be an everyday starter and bat cleanup on the Padres, or would you rather, like, be a role player or, like, a bat, like, seventh or eighth on, you know, a team like the Cardinals or a top team? It's like, so Sam Ponder is just a role player on the ESPN program, but it still runs laps around the Fox program that Aaron Andrews is basically the host of.
Right,
you know,
right.
I tried to check out the number one, it took me 3 weeks to find which channel Fox Sports 1 was on my thankfully, it was 769, so it made it easy to remember.
Oh, I gotcha.
But, yeah,
nice.
That was the only reason I still remember it. But it's like, all right, this show's decent, but you got Aaron Andrews just trying her best, but you got Joey Harrington sitting there, you got Eddie George. Both of these guys are just shills for their own schools. I mean, they do a decent job, but it's like they're trying their best, but it's not a program you can get into. I think it's, you know, like they say in your college economics class, barriers to entry. It's really, really, really tough to start up a new college pregame show that's going to hold a candle to what Game Day is established.
Right, right. That's a very good point. And Game Day has been on for a very long time. You're talking about two decades now of the show. And
oh, yeah.
It's really a tradition that's really established itself, and a lot of the same guys are still doing the show, which is really remarkable that they've held it together for that long. So, you know, we had the NFL today and the NFL way back in the 80s, and today we've got Game Day. I mean, it really is about the same kind of tradition, and it forges its own legacy. It's pretty awesome, actually, and I grew up with it, too, you know, over the years, seeing them go to all sorts of wacky locations, And the tradition continues, basically. It's a fun program. I really enjoyed it forever and continue to.
Right. It's as much as football is, like, very much based on kind of rituals and routines and kind of always coming back to the same place, you know, some of those pregame shows are really a part of it now. Like, you know, you look at the schedule for a given college week, it's like, all right, where's Game Day going to be this week? It's
yeah.
Part of your Saturday. It's just the way it is. And it's going to take a lot, especially if they're not traveling to campuses, it's going to take a whole hell of a lot for Fox Sports. You know, they can have 10 Aaron Andrews on their shows, and they can have 10 Aaron Andrews and 10 Carissa Thompsons on their shows.
Yeah.
For that matter. And it's still going to be tough just try to supplant that. It's going to take a long time.
I dig it. Yeah. Now, it's, you know, it's really hard to unseat. You know, I mean, we know this locally. I mean, locally for you. In the case of sports radio, I mean, it's going to take a lot to unseat Mike Francesa. We know that. Well, he's a big guy. I mean, how do you unseat a guy like that? He's huge. But, I mean,
Yeah, that's at least 240 pounds of resistance.
At least.
At the absolute least.
And he's been doing it 25 years. I mean, that's a lot to come back from.
And yeah, and he'll keep reminding you of it too, in case anyone ever forgot.
And if there's any debate,
he comes out and gets A-Rod in studio today. In case anyone ever thought he was fading, he just comes out in front of the haymaker towards Kay and all of them.
That was a very impressive get. I mean, look, I know it was a softball interview along the likes of Larry King, but hey, listen, he got A-Rod in studio. I mean, that's as good as it gets. That is as good as it gets.
The fact that he walks out of that MLB offices and, you know, gets into a car, and that car starts driving towards Blue Heaven is just, you know, it says all it needs to say.
It wasn't even
all you need to know about.
That's all you need to know. it really wasn't even planned. He wasn't even trying. He just like, you know, we might have A-Rod today, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, without even looking, you blink once, and then boom, he's in studio. I mean, let's see K do that. Let's see Michael, Stephen A. Smith do that. Let's see anybody else try. Let's see Mike and Mike get him in studio without planning it. It's not going to happen. I mean, that's really just impressive.
Yeah, unless Aaron wants to talk about basketball, I don't think Screaming A will be having him on anytime soon.
Decent point. I am waiting, though, for that next interview when they talk about Miami Hurricanes football, meaning Mike and A-Rod. It's got to happen. I look forward to that.
He could have thrown a nice little Duke dig at him, but he avoided it.
Yep, he had a chance.
He could have thrown a nice little barb at him for that Duke game. But
that would have been good. Well, the bro hug that they exchanged at the end, you know, I mean, I know, who was that guy that came on from the Daily News?
Michael O'Keefe.
O'Keefe was claiming that he did a bro hug. Well, the proof's in the pudding now. I mean, we saw it on TV, so basically, it was pretty good. It was pretty funny to see it actually happen, so... This was definitely a lot of fun today.
I like the kind of awkward hesitation right beforehand. So, you know, like walking the girl to her door before, at the end of a date. It's like, do I go? Do I not? It's pretty funny to see Mike, who makes himself out to be this colossal superhuman, still kind of, you know, still, you know, in awe of all these athletes, just like we all are.
Right. It's true. I mean, more than anybody else, he's a definite fanboy of Mr. Rodriguez. We only have 3 minutes to go. Do you want to talk about the Cowboys, or do you want to get into this Prince Fielder trade? Did you hear about that? I'm not Fielder. Yeah, that's right. Fielder.
I did. I'll touch on it for just a second. I think it basically was a trade that's about Max Scherzer as much as it's about Prince Fielder. So them taking on Kinsler means they can move Miguel Cabrera back over to first base where he really belongs, probably play, and you try to re-sign Peralta, have him play at third where he truly belongs. Kinsler takes second, and then they have Jose Iglesias play shortstop, and all of a sudden Tigers are still a damn good team, and they're going to have the money to be able to re-sign Max Scherzer at the end of the season. So it basically keeps the Tigers strong in the AL for years to come, and I just can't wait to see how Prince Fielder deals with that Texas heat come mid-July, because that'll be brutal.
Yeah, no question. But, you know, I was thinking, I think he might actually get some better numbers there in Texas, though, because it's a smaller ballpark and it's just a better hitting environment, period.
Absolutely.
I think his numbers are going to go way up, actually. So it might actually work out, but we'll see how it goes once the playoffs start, if they even get there. I mean,
yeah.
Right?
The Rangers have had their share of issues finishing things over the past few years.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so we have about a minute.
If we have mid time on the Cowboys, I'd love to.
Yeah, let's keep it with Dallas. We've got about a minute. What's your feel about the Cowboys coming off of the bye week for this game against the Giants?
They've kind of taken one step forward and two steps back. They've gotten a couple key players back on their defense, which is obviously their biggest weakness among their many weaknesses. The irreplaceable Sean Lee at the middle linebacker position totally changes their identity. But then again, they get Jason Hatcher back and DeMarcus Ware another week closer to fully healthy. So they do all of a sudden have three quarters of a starting defensive line, which is a lot better than they've had pretty much all season. In terms of the secondary, they have at least today, Maurice Claiborne and J.J. Wilcox, their three safeties, started. They practiced today, so hopefully they can play, which now brings you up to about, I think, six actual legitimate starters on their defense out of 11 positions, which is a lot better than the two that they had on the field in the second half against New Orleans 2 weeks ago. So they gained back three quality players on their defense, but they lose possibly the best player on their team in Sean Lee.
Yeah.
And it's going to create a very interesting domino effect because Bruce Carter and Ernie Sims have not played well in his place when he's had to leave the game. Bruce Carter even got yanked from the San Diego game for giving up two wheel routes for touchdowns to Danny Woodhead. And in that system they play, the Monty Kiffin defense, the middle linebacker is one is basically the prime, the entire pass defense, the cover system revolves around him and him getting to his drop. So if you can't cover the pass, which Sean Lee is superb at, they're going to be in trouble. What might help them is that the weather is going to be dicey. It's only be a high of 35, and who knows what the wind is going to be like. So I don't know if there's going to be much of a passing day. I guess that remains to be seen. But then again, if it's the passing conditions aren't good, then that's good to dull take Dallas' offense very much as well. So it's going to be give and take there.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. I do have a good feeling about the Cowboys at least making this interesting, so we'll see if that comes to fruition.
Ah, shit.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's been
thanks
fun.
Thanks a lot, Bird.
Oops. All right. Well, Lou, it's been fun talking to you tonight. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope you enjoy your weekend.
Well, thanks for having me, and sorry to keep you waiting for a couple minutes, but it was definitely my pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. Enjoy your evening, and thanks again. We'll catch up soon.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave. Enjoy. Good luck with the rest of the show.
Thanks much. All right. Lou and Hoboken on the show, which now leads us to Tyler's investments for the evening. And to start us off, we'll give you some written picks from our friend Ron in New Jersey. Very quickly, we'll go through these. He likes, in college, Vanderbilt +3 versus Tennessee, and Minnesota +16 at home against Wisconsin. And then he gives us the Stone Cold Lead Pipe Lock of the Millennium. That would be Dallas -2.5 versus the visiting Dallas Cowboys. And then the Lions lay in 9.5 against Tampa Bay. I forget whether that's in Detroit. I think it is. So those are your picks from Ron in New Jersey. Last week he went 2-1-1. No, actually I think he went 2-2, and that is also his season record. So 2-2 overall in the season. So we now go to John in Connecticut for the next set of picks. John leading the competition this so far in the season standings. I'll give that to you in a minute. But first, let's welcome him onto the program. John, welcome back. Ready to defend first place. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me on again. I see your show is explicit now, so I guess I'll say the Packers are pissing me the fuck off at the moment.
We've actually had that tag forever, but I guess they've been able to display that more prominently. We do that to protect ourselves so that, you know, if we do utter a curse word on the show, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a problem. We don't get violations or nothing like that. You know, that sort of deal. But you are welcome to curse as much as you like tonight. So, and you said you had a college pick that you absolutely love. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. So let's start us off. Feel free to tap the floor.
All right. Well, I'm going to call this pick, Dave, my get out of debt play of the year, and by that I mean, if the U.S. government wanted to bet the $600 billion in debt that we have on this game, we'd have a surplus by Sunday morning. So my, you know, if you gamble and you kind of pick up on things as you go, and one of my favorite angles that I like to play is an unranked team favored over a ranked team, and that's exactly what you have here with Kansas State -4.5 over Oklahoma. Now, Kansas State burned me last week, but TCU played a pretty good game. I'll give them credit, but I absolutely love Kansas State this week. Everyone in America is going to say, hey, it's the 20th ranked team in the country, Oklahoma 8-2, getting points from an unranked team, and they're going to jump on it. But it's not going to work out well. Kansas State's been playing great football lately, and Oklahoma's backup quarterback is starting. He can't throw. Trevor Knight, I saw him playing the Baylor game. He's not very good. And I look for Kansas State to get a pretty easy win here. So that's my first game for college, Kansas State -4.5. And the second game, we're going to go with the feel-good story of the year in college football, and that's Duke. And they're laying 6 against Wake Forest. And it's on the road, which kind of makes you nervous. They really haven't been in this kind of situation before with this, you know, kind of pressure late in the season. But I think, you know, two wins from here gets them to the ACC title game. They will be destroyed by Florida State. But until then, we'll let them ride the magic carpet, so to speak. Wake is just a dreadful team, and they lost their best player due to a broken collarbone, ironically enough. Michael Campanaro, I read he's like he has 40% of the team's total offense, and he's not playing. And without him in there, their offense is just a disgrace. So I think Duke will go on the road and win this game by a touchdown. So Duke minus six for the second college play at Wake Forest. Do you want to just go right into my NFL picks?
Yeah, let's do it. The NFL picks for the investments.
Okay, so first off, and I actually had two really, really outrageous picks written down. I'm only going to go with one of them officially, but I guess I'll give you kind of a third one as a bonus. We won't count it for the contest, but we'll just kind of have it, just get it out there. But first, we're going to actually go with the Jaguars getting 10 in Houston. I don't know how anyone can lay 10 points with the Houston Texans at the moment. I don't care if they're playing the Little Sisters of the Poor. They're trying to win or lose at the moment. I mean, we've lost 8 games in a row. Wade Phillips is still on the sidelines in an interim role. You know, the quarterback and the wide receiver are fighting on the sidelines. They benched Keenum and put Schaub in for some ungodly reason the other day in the fourth quarter. It's just a complete dumpster fire. And the Jags are bad, I know that, but at least they're still, you know, at least trying for their coach. The more competitive games that have been on the road, actually. They nearly had that great game in Denver. Well, great considered they were, you know, 4-touchdown underdogs. They only lost by, 14 or so. I just think they keep this close, and who knows? It's one of those scenarios where, you know, Houston, you know, it's a kind of here-we-go-again situation, and they could lose this game if it gets tight in the second half. So we'll go with the Jags plus 10 for the first game. In the second game, we're going to go with the Rams minus 1 against the Bears. I really like the way the Rams' defense has been playing. I kind of felt their season was over when Sam Bradford got injured, but their defense has really stepped up. Kellen Clemens isn't very good, but coming off a bye, they had that huge win over Indianapolis. And they have a huge edge in this game with their running game, their newfound running game, actually, with Zach Stacy, who's just been pounding the ball over the last month. I believe he's second or third in the league in rushing. And it goes directly at the Bears' huge weakness, which is their run defense. They've lost a lot of guys on the defensive line due to injury. I look for the Rams to exploit that. Their defense can get some good pass rush going on McCown. It's not great. I don't trust him in a road game here. So we'll go with the Rams minus 1 off the bye against the Bears. So to recap your four picks, you get out of debt play of the year, Kansas State minus 4.5 against Oklahoma, Duke minus 6 at Wake Forest, and the NFL, the Jaguars plus 10 at Houston, and the Rams minus 1 at home versus Chicago. And like kind of the bonus play that I'll just throw out there, I think the Panthers are going to have a huge letdown this Sunday, and I would like Miami to cover the plus 4.5, but let's just, you know, kind of get that out there. That won't be one of the official plays, but I'm just saying that's a play that I would endorse this Sunday.
You know, that's an interesting one. You know, you were saying it's pretty outrageous. It might actually be an interesting call because it wouldn't really be, logically speaking, that wouldn't be so far-fetched, actually, really. I mean, because even when they win, they're not like against the tougher teams. It's not like they're winning by a whole lot of points, except for Atlanta, but Atlanta's terrible, so... I mean, this game, look, the game in Monday night, they won by 4. So, you know, if they win by 4 this week, they will not cover. So I think it's an interesting call. Okay. Just to repeat, the Stone Cold Lead Pipe Lock of the Millennium from Ron was Giants minus 2.5. I may have said Dallas. It's actually the Giants that he has selected in this game. He is riding the wave. And John's get out of debt play of the year, K-State minus 4.5. At OU. John for the season is 7-4-1. Last week he was, I believe, 2-1-1. And now we go to Andy in Seattle with his picks for investments this week. Andy, welcome to the program. How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing good, Dave. I am just trying to turn my sound off here. I got your show on and I'm listening to you, so try to eliminate some of the reverb here. And, yeah, having a good time. I heard Checker's picks. They all sound good. You know, I like when all of us can kind of group up together and find some games and kind of, you know, a unit a day keeps the boogeyman away mentality. And, you know, he's basically been the driving force behind that. I used to have this really compulsive urge to chase all the time, and he's just like, patience, man. So... here we go.
All right.
So do you want me to just read the picks?
Let's do it.
Any game, pick a game, any game.
Yeah, two college, two pro, like we normally do. So you have the floor, Andy.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, man. All right. Game number one. We'll take Oregon. I saw 20.5. I think the line fluctuates between 20 and 21, but I went on the bookmaker website and found 20.5 about an hour ago. So we'll go by that. If anyone else objects, we can negotiate something. But I'll take Oregon giving 20.5. They are playing at Arizona, the Wildcats. Now, here's the thing with Oregon. I mean, all season long, they were dominating, covering. Let's see them play Alabama, and all you got to do is get by Stanford. But Stanford historically has played them tough, and revenge factor, whatever you want to call it, they've got their number. Oregon can't match up physically against Stanford. Stanford, pro set NFL style, munch, keeps that flashy, fast, maybe bully team Oregon off the field. And they basically did that. And then after that game, it was, yeah, I told you, Oregon, they're not that good. And they totally discount everything Oregon did up until that point. And they're like, yeah, I told you, Oregon's not just in tournament. It's like, well, hold on now. You're going to discredit everything they've done up until that point? And secondly, we kind of knew Stanford could do that. So just because that game happened, it doesn't mean Oregon is going to suddenly forget how to play football. And even last week against Utah in the first half, they didn't play very well. No one wants to play Oregon. They have nothing to play for. And then the second half, they woke up out of the coma, and Utah ended up getting killed. Oregon didn't end up covering, but they ended up winning by like 23. It was like a tie game late in the second quarter. And after Stanford lost to USC, ooh, guess who has something to play for? Oregon. Now they're right back in it.
Yep.
And with Arizona, Arizona is kind of a they are a soft team. I like Rich Rodriguez. And under the right circumstances and playing the right opponent, they can do really well. They can score, and they can win their fair share of games. They're going to go to a bowl game. But against a team like Oregon, they are not going to hang around, I don't think. And I think I mean, their basketball team is arguably one of the best in the country, and I think their fan base, I know people are like, what are you talking about? This makes no sense. You just talk about X's and O's. Well, I think their fan base is basically indifferent now. I mean, you can make a case that Arizona Wildcat fan is indifferent to begin with, but now that they got the basketball team basically dominating campus, the football program is an afterthought. So I don't care if this game was at home, or, you know, in the campus, in the quad, whatever. I don't think there's going to be that much interest in this game against Oregon, and that's why I think Oregon, when all said and done, is going to end up winning this game by more than the point spread. So give me Oregon minus 20.5. That's probably my most confident game out of these four. Game number two, I'll take UCLA, one of the local teams of your of the radio host here, Mr. Dave. I'll take UCLA getting 2.5 in the Rose Bowl against ASU. Similar mindset here. You know, UCLA is a very good team. They've lost two games, so they're not going to win the national championship, but they can still win the they have an outside shot at, you know, winning the Pac-12. They'd have to beat Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. They'd also have to get to the Pac-12 championship game, and they can do that if they beat Arizona in a couple of days, and then the USC game. USC, that's a rivalry game. They're looking ahead, looking past Arizona State. But Arizona State is 8-2, and that is a big game. I mean, there's no – how do you look past Arizona State to get to your rivalry game? Arizona, that is just as big a game. So, and here's the thing I feel about Arizona State. I feel like Arizona State is quite the bully team. Todd Graham is the bully coach, and they've looked really bad a few times this year. The first time was against Stanford, where they were losing about 35-0 in the first half, and then they lost, you know, to Notre Dame on some neutral site. I think it was in San Antonio or something like that. And let's be honest, Notre Dame's not a very strong football program this year. Big finger. And I was even last week at home, they got out really early against Oregon State, and then they ended up getting backdoored because, you know, they were up 20-3, and then they basically just started focusing on stuff off the field. So now they're going to go to the Rose Bowl and are expected to win by 2.5. Now, here's the other thing. Last week, I thought the line between UCLA and UW was kind of strange, and I felt that UCLA should have been favored by more. Obviously, they ended up covering. I also think this is kind of a weird line, and maybe I'm stepping into a trap, but I don't really care. I'll take UCLA giving 2.5. I think UCLA should be favored by 2.5, not getting 2.5. But anyway, that's what traps are for.
Yep.
And I'll take UCLA getting 2.5. So those are the two college games. For the pros, I'm going to echo a few people's thoughts this week. I thought it was pretty difficult finding games that were like, ooh, I feel good about this one. But that's what happens. You know, this is the last week with some teams on byes, and you kind of have some pickings that are slightly slim. So the first game, we're going to go with the heart here. We're going to take the Patriots getting 2.5 at Denver. Now, I'll be quick with this analysis. I don't think the Patriots lose two games in a row that often. I think it's going to be a cold game. The wind's going to be a factor. And on the heels of last Monday's game, I think the Patriots will be, you know, motivated. They just want to get back on the field and erase whatever bad juju they had in the Carolina game and, you know, erase the negativity. And I know, like, why are you going Peyton Manning? Are you stupid? Peyton Manning is an automatic, efficient machine. Are you root for the Patriots? Of course you're going to take the Patriots. But, you know, Manning, Brady's been quite the rivalry going back to the early 2000s. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, Peyton Manning does not usually have the best of times in Foxborough. And so it's not like he's just playing against Brady. He's playing against those ghosts, and you know those ghosts are everywhere in all walks of life, lurking, watching, remembering. And Denver's a good team, but they've, you know, early in the year they were scoring all these points, and their defense isn't super. I mean, Cowboys are scoring like 40 points against them. Even Jacksonville had some fun. Jacksonville can cover. If Jacksonville can cover against Denver, why can't New England, you know? So, and I don't, the game against Kansas City looked so good, but the back door ended up getting open. Cardwell Tight was in the mix. So, you know, it's going to be a fun game Sunday night. Basically, the appetizer to next Sunday night, that's the real Sunday night game anyway, Dallas or New York, Washington. This is like just the scallop, you know, the bacon-wrapped scallop. The main meal is next week. But I like appetizers, so give me New England getting 2.5 at home for game number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then game number two, this is definitely a trap, but I'm going to take the Saints giving 9.5 on the road in Atlanta. Basically, I heard Mr. Mike say, you know, Atlanta is going to try to play spoiler with all these teams in the playoff hunt, but I don't think they're going to do that against the Saints. I mean, the Falcons just got pulverized by the Buccaneers. How do you rebound from that anyway? Like, when Atlanta's going to come to your building and you're going to try to stay competitive after just getting your doors blown off by a team of Tampa, Shiano, of all people, is, you know, winning big. And I just don't see the Falcons being competitive in this game. I mean, I know Ass Clown is not the same Ass Clown on the road as he is at home, but they still have, you know, quite the prolific offense. Falcons' defense has been beyond atrocious this year. I can't think of one game where they looked, sharp, you know, for any amount of time. So I just think the Saints are going to have a little pitch and catch action. And I was a little down on them last week. We take the tie against San Francisco. I expected them to do a little more, but in any event, I think they'll rebound, and then that'll set up quite the game next week when they play in Seattle. But first, let's watch them take care of business in Atlanta and win by 9.5. So those are my games.
All right, your games, just to recap, Oregon minus 20.5 at Arizona, UCLA plus 2.5 against Arizona State at home, then the Patriots plus 2.5 at home against Denver. Interesting that they're a home dog in this game. But let me justify it, obviously, because Peyton's Peyton. So, but anyway, Saints minus 9.5 at Atlanta. Good pick, Sandy. Very well done, and good luck to you, of course, as we go into the weekend. We will now go to our final challenger before we enter the namesake of the program, and that would be Say Hello to Otis. By the way, Andy's going to extend his 2-1-1 season mark this weekend with those picks. So let's bring in Say Hello to Otis. Oatman, welcome back to the program. How are you doing tonight?
Dave, I'm doing great. How are you? Tough act to follow there with Andy, though, by the way.
I know. He was a riot, wasn't he? All right.
Before I get to the picks, I have to say I heard Andy say that, I believe he said, a show a day keeps the boogeyman away. I think that's what he said. Well, for the Knicks fans tonight, you were the boogeyman.
I'm sorry.
You bet against them. You claimed that the game was over. It went into overtime, and then they lost. I mean, you hit us every which way.
It's just gonna be when you get local board teams, so to speak, involved with these bets. It's all over the place. Who knows what happens? You're absolutely correct.
It's all good.
All right. Well,
it's all good.
Good effort by the Knicks tonight, though. I must say. I mean, they were into that thing for quite a while. I will take full responsibility for the loss. Clearly, that was their game. But anyway, let's go ahead and hear your picks this week. What do you have for us on the table?
Yeah, I got a couple of picks here. I'm pretty shocked that there haven't been any duplicates here in the NFL yet. But let me start with the college first. I'm going to start off with a team that's become a favorite to the podcast here with the challengers, if you will. I'm going to take Houston minus 4 against Cincy. As I said, I think 2 weeks ago, they've only not covered against the spread once this year. Andy picked them last week. I'm rolling back to them this week. Give me Houston minus 4 against Cincy.
All right.
We'll keep that short and sweet. I don't want to step on the junk man's toes, so I'm going to kind of fly through these here.
Okay.
The next pick, we're going to go back to these are very boring compared to the others, but we're going to go with Baylor minus 10 here. This Baylor team is just, their offense is just a machine, and I know that, you know, the other team, they have to try and stop the other team once in a while, but so far this year, that hasn't really been a problem. Also, like Houston, they've only not covered once this year. So I'm going to stick with them, give them another go this week. Hopefully that high-powered offense can keep it continue.
All right, to the pros. Let's see what you got.
Yeah, now to the pros, where I agree it's a very difficult year. And that's why with my first pick, I have to take your squad, the Steelers, plus 1 this week against Cleveland. Cleveland, this line also confused me, as does the other game that I'm about to pick. I mean, I don't see how Cleveland is favored against anyone right now. I know they're home, but Pittsburgh is lurking right now. I think that Pittsburgh is going to grab that last playoff spot, so I think this is just the time to make their move. The Roethlisberger is just as steady as they come. Now he's got Antonio Brown left and right, all over the place, leading the league in receiving, if I'm correct. So I'm gonna take the Steelers there. And this last game was between two teams, both of which I don't believe I've picked this year, and I don't know if I would ever again. I'm trying to decide this right now. I'm just gonna go with it. I'm gonna grab the Cardinals minus 1 against Indy. This line doesn't make much sense to me. I feel like Indy should be favored, and that's kind of my reason for taking the Cardinals. If that makes any kind of back wave logic, I don't love that Indy team. I know Luck is a covering machine, comebacks left and right, but I really like the Cardinals defense. Sugar Bear back there, Peterson, a cornerback. I just really like that defense against the pass and Luck. And, I mean, Trent Richardson, let's be honest. I mean, what a disgrace that's turned out to be. So yeah, give me the Cardinals minus one there.
Okay.
And we'll roll with them.
All right, so your recap, Houston minus four versus Cincy, Baylor minus 10 versus Oklahoma State. And if there's an over-under in effect that's allowable to bet on, that would probably be in consideration. It should be a lot of points. Steelers plus
probably
one.
Probably got 95.
I would take the over. I mean, Steelers plus one at Cleveland. And Cardinals minus one versus Indian. I think there's one thing in your favor, Oatman. It's the fact that the Cardinals tend to play pretty well. I mean, I shouldn't say play well. They look horrible every time I see them. But they cover most of their home games. But it's just brutal to watch because they have, like, no offense. It is very tough to watch them play. It's always, like, a 4-5.
It's strange the way they handle that, too, because Ellington is a good back. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why he's not getting all their carries and just using whatever his face is to spell him, but he should be getting all their carries. He's a great back there. That's confusing as well.
Yeah, co-signed on that. He's very, very good. I mean, he's fun to watch too. All right, well, good luck to you, Oatman. Thanks again for the picks. We'll go ahead and see how they go as you continue to keep.
All right, have a good one.
All right, you too. So now we go from the Oatman and our challengers to the man of the segment. The person himself, the namesake for which this spot is named, he is Tyler in Moor Park with Tyler's Investments.
Y'all ready for this? 98. 99, 100.
Sorry, Dave. We're just working out my handstand, one-arm push-ups there, buddy. Sorry to get a little workout in before the call here.
All right. Good exercise is good for you. What's up, Tyler?
Hold on, Dave. Let me say goodbye to The Rock real quick. Let me say goodbye. All right, Dwayne. Take care, man. You be good. All right. No problem, Dwayne. I'll give you that arm wrestling rematch tomorrow. You got it, man. Better luck next time. All right. We'll see you.
All right.
Rock's a big fan of your show, Dave.
Good to know. Thank you very much, Dwayne. Good to hear from you. Just to fill you guys in, he has, in fact, met The Rock himself, the man being Dwayne Johnson. So Tyler, at a gym at one point, met him, and they were just, what were you guys doing, pumping iron, like, you know, bench pressing, like, 150 pounds or something like that? I mean,
Doing curls for the girls, Dave. Doing curls for the girls.
Thing of beauty.
And fact, Jack. As I was walking to the drinking fountain, passed by Dwayne, said, "Looking good, brah." He slaps me on the shoulder and goes, "You too, brah." So we're local brothers, buddy.
That's a thing of beauty. Definitely keep a good relationship with him. He'll be your, you know, he'll come to your defense. He should be a good asset. You know, if you get in a jam, he'll start coming in as Scorpion King or something, and it could be a good time. So you smell what The Rock is cooking. Do we smell a winning week from you finally? I mean, you had a 1-3 week again. You did have a winning week once though. So we were hoping that we can have that repeated. What are your thoughts as you get into this?
Let's address last week, Dave. Let's address
all right,
it.
Let's do it.
So the way I figure it, I got through my picks in about 2 minutes and gave you a solid winner. Andy took about 20 minutes to get through his picks. And he gave you two winners, so he's taking about he's getting about one winner every 10 minutes. I'm giving you one winner every 2 minutes, buddy. That's efficiency. That's productivity. Your audience is a bunch of movers and shakers. They need things done fast, quick, right action. You know, so I'm giving them what they want in time. You know.
All right.
I'm an assembly line of winners, Dave.
Well, let's see some winners tonight. We look forward to that. And again, as we always say, good luck to you as you divulge these picks. Let's see what's on your mind. What have you got for us from the college and the pro landscape?
Well, I got some good stuff for you, man.
Right.
First game on the docket. First of all, you know, I didn't quite catch everybody's picks. So hopefully I don't have any picks that are overlapping anybody else. But first thing on the docket is my biggest lock of the week. So I'm going to start right out. I know you want my number one pick. So I'm going to give you a Royal Embossed, FDIC insured, 5-star platinum triple diamond lock of the week. You ready for this?
All right.
Oklahoma State Cowboys. It's going to be a shootout, Dave. Oklahoma State, and I think at home, they knock Baylor off their pedestal. Baylor's not going to know what hit them, man. Oklahoma State's going to come out, probably even win that game, but we'll take the 10.5.
All right, so you are actually
overlap, buddy.
All right, so you've got Oklahoma State with maybe and certainly covering the spread at home in a big game, and College Game Day will be there too. So we'll see if some other guy comes up there over Desmond Howard's shoulder and does the robot for us this week.
Highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely.
And even if they try, it won't be nearly as good, Dave.
Hey, that's very nice of you to say. All right, so Oklahoma State, you're big on the underdog.
Does that overlap anybody's picks?
It's a head-to-head. It doesn't overlap a pick, but it is the same game another guy picked, but the other way. So basically, you have 10.5. We'll bring that down.
Oh, the other guy's going with Baylor.
The other guy's going with Baylor. So that would be that pick.
All right, I appreciate that.
The Oatman, Otis, says Baylor minus 10. We're going to normalize you to 10, too, so that way it's consistent. So we will go 10, in your case, instead of 10.5. So that actually works in your favor, because then they – or actually, maybe we'll have – let me figure that out. I'll figure it out, all right? So it's just half a point. It's not a big difference. I mean, they're going to score like 800 points. I don't think half a point's going to make a huge difference anyway.
If the guy who's challenging me wants it at 10, let's go 10.
Let's go 10. Okay, we'll normalize
although,
it.
Although
10.
I don't really like, but you know what, Dave? I don't like pushes, so mm-hmm. Why don't we just call it 10.1, and we'll split the difference there. We'll go 10.1. How about that?
10.1. Okay, you got it, buddy. Okay, so 10.1, yeah. Oklahoma State. All right, let's see what you got.
I got a feeling, just not to stray too far from the topic here, but I got a feeling that the person who chose Baylor is kind of falling into the misperception and is easily fooled here. I have a good friend named Pat the Gat that I know really well, and if I told you his nickname is Pat the Gat, and it is, what would you assume that person does to give him that nickname?
I wouldn't have the foggiest idea. What would he do to get a nickname like Pat the Gat?
Well, most people would probably think he's a gangster, you know, a bank robber or something like that. He's actually a school teacher. He teaches special ed children. So even though he has that rough and tough nickname, he's saving America's youth one by one up there in Sacramento. But Pat the Gat actually taught me a good lesson a long time ago. He used to be a car salesman. And he used to work with me in enterprise car sales, gosh, about 10, 11 years ago. And one time we're selling cars, and I'm watching Pat the Gat. He taught me a lot about what I know in sales. And he was dealing with this, call it a 70-year-old lady who was a little crotchety, a little finicky, a little hard to deal with. And she wanted a Toyota Camry, but it had to have a V6. And the Toyota Camrys we were selling at the time only had 4 cylinders. So he's trying the whole thing about talking about fuel economy and you know, the benefits of a 4-cylinder engine. And this lady was not trying to hear it. She wanted the Camry and a V6. And even though they test drove a 4-cylinder Camry and it drove just fine, had plenty of pep, she said she didn't want that car. It didn't have a 6-cylinder engine. So what Pat the Gat did, I thought, was brilliant. So Pat the Gat says, okay, you know what? I'm going to go in the back and I'm going to go look for a car for you. And you know what they had in the back, Dave?
What do they have in the back?
They had nothing. Nothing. Jack, there's nothing in the back. He drove the Camry around the block, saying he's in the back, took about 10 minutes, wiped it down, cleaned it up a little bit, brought it back up there, and said to that lady with a big smile on her face, I found your car. Here it is. I got it for you. It's all about the presentation, Dave. She said, oh, really? This one has a V6? Pat the Gat pops the hood and says, look. She looks. They drive it, test drive it. She says, oh, this one's so much better. Buys the car, takes off, burning gas. Dave, that's what we call a misperception pad as well.
All right, very well. An interesting take on how you can dress up something and make it, you know, very presentable. All right, so with all that in mind, how would you follow up this embossed royal 4-star diamond?
I would follow up that another team that is probably being misperceived, and the person who's misperceived the most in college football, I would say, is Johnny Football,
mm-hmm.
And we're going to go with Johnny Football plus 4.5. Johnny Football actually could be a Rhodes Scholar if he wanted to, but most people don't treat him that way. So we're going to go with Johnny Football plus 4.5 in Death Valley. How do you like them apples?
Well, you've been behind Death Valley, though, so this is a little bit of a surprise that you're going against them this time. What are your reasonings for this, other than the fact that Johnny Football is certainly playing at a very high level?
Reasoning is they're better, mm-hmm. and Johnny Football loves to go into a hostile crowd and quiet them down, show his little money sign, you know, chip them off a little bit, make it rain, mm-hmm. and that's my reasoning. They're going to win that game, but we'll still take the 4.5.
Okay. You know, I mean, and listen, Johnny Football is certainly not afraid of anybody, certainly not Bama. He's given them a hard time. He gives everybody a hard time. So I think it's certainly going to be a good game. I look forward to seeing the result. All right, so now to the NFL picks.
Is it a bold enough pick for you? I know you like it when I do bold picks. How does that one rank on the bold scale?
I would say it's a medium salsa bold, as my friend Andrews Jacobson would say.
Medium salsa bold. All right. Well, let's see if I can throw some jalapenos in the next one.
All right, let's do it. NFL picks for you.
Next one, I'm going to spice it up for you, Dave. Just for that, I'm going to throw some habaneros in this one. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready to go. What you got?
We're going with the
Chargers. Oh, boy. They are back.
Chargers plus 4.5 in KC.
Ooh, this is interesting. Very interesting.
Another quarterback who likes to talk some trash, Philip Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
How's that on the bold scale?
No, that's pretty bold. They've been struggling, too. I mean, they've really been having a tough time. But certainly... I mean, against Kansas City. I'm talking about San Diego going into Kansas City. And, you know, they lost to Miami last week, so I'm intrigued to see whether they'll put up a fight against Kansas City at Arrowhead. So we will see. I mean, could happen.
Put up a fight.
Oh, you think?
You watch my lightning bolts, buddy. I'll be wearing powder blue on Sunday.
Oh, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear the return of the lightning bolt from the Tyler. That'll be fun.
You got it.
All right, so Chargers. That's bold. That's lightning bold right there. Okay.
All right.
Got that written down for you?
Last pick. We're saving the best for last.
Okay.
Just because I want to finish down the stretch with another hot pick for you. And we're going to go with the 49ers, the Niners, plus or minus 5.5 in D.C.
Interesting. And I know that D.C.'s been fighting it. You know, it's going to be, you know, it's funny that nobody got to this game yet, because I thought that's at least somebody would have picked it between four challengers and yourself. And it took the last pick, so you know it's an interesting.
You can
call.
Always rely on Tyler, Dave, to come through when you need someone to come through.
I love it.
Last pick, and I got it.
Yeah, I could see the Niners doing that. 5.5. The only thing is that Washington does play pretty well at home for the most part, but they look a little beat up. But they showed some heart. Did you see? You saw that them make that comeback in Philadelphia. So. That's the one thing you watch out for, but the Niners, I think, are going to really want to fire back after, you know, really for a good part of the game out playing the Saints. So, Niners 5.5. I can see that. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you've got four picks. Let's recap them again. Oklahoma State plus 10.5. Texas A&M plus 4.5.
No. Oklahoma State plus 10.1.
Well, all right, we'll say 10.1, but it rounds up. So we'll go 10.1 for Oklahoma State. Texas A&M plus 4.5. Chargers plus 4.5, and the Niners minus 5.5. Three dogs, one favorite. Good luck to you, Tyler, and thanks for coming on once again. And
hey, Dave, just so I know, and I can write them all down, can you give me my challengers picks as well?
Yeah, I will give that to you. There's a lot of them, so I can let me just quickly recap them all. Okay,
how many challengers do I got?
Do you have four? Well, because we have three. We had three guys come on today, and a fourth one wrote them in. So. I could link
like
you.
The Royal Rumble, Dave. I'm throwing them all out one by one, right, yeah. Over the top rope.
There's a lot, though. So do you want me to just – I can write it up on the blog and link you on Facebook if you'd like, and then you could run it down.
Here's what I want to do. I'm going to be extra bold for you, Dave.
Okay.
I want you to write down all those teams. So that means there's 16 teams that are out there, right, that have been chosen?
Right. I mean, there might be common games, but for the most part, it's pretty close to 16, yeah.
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to do a 13 or whatever, however many it is, let's just call it 15 if there's not that many overlapping. I'm going to do a 15 team parlay in the opposite of all my challengers. That's what I think of all my challengers. I'm going 15 team parlay against them. So if all 15 hit for me against them, that puts me light years ahead of all my challenges.
You're going to win like $1,058 if you do that. That's the odds of that are astronomical. But at any rate, I'll go ahead and post that all for you when we have a chance. Tyler, once again, my thanks. Good luck to you in the picks. And good luck to all the challengers as well. Thank you all very much for joining us tonight. We'll do it again next week. Good luck.
See ya.
All right, buddy. That's Tyler and then Tyler's investments. We now go to random questions with Kevin on the Cape. And again, I'm appreciate his patience waiting for the segment. Kevin, welcome to the program. How are you doing tonight?
Let's just get this over with. I'm obviously getting phased out.
Yeah. Do you want to? You know, I don't have a comment on that. I'm sorry about that. But listen, how are you? Okay, let's start over. Kevin, what's new with you?
You know, I was just kidding, right?
Yeah, no. You know, it's certainly a big time right now. In this spot, it's just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, we may have to make it our own program. You know what I mean? I like to have spinoffs for TV shows. We need to do like a spinoff for this podcast called Tyler's Investments or something like that. You know what I mean?
You need to do what I've been telling you to do for months, for years. You need more hours, Dave. Per week.
Yeah.
You don't even do the Monday show anymore, do you?
I haven't been doing the Monday show this year. I haven't had time. It's been, usually after Monday Night Football, I just want to go to sleep.
You got 2 hours a week, Dave. America needs more than 2 hours, Dave. I'm telling you. I'm not just being sarcastic. That's true.
No, I dig it. I dig that. You know, it's interesting. You have a point, though. I mean, we've had a lot of material tonight. It always feels like this is the time of year where I feel like we could have, like, legitimately, like, a five-hour show like Francesa does, and we really would have a pretty decent chance of filling up most of the time. There wouldn't be any filler at all this time of year. We've really had a really good time. I mean, I don't know if you caught Lou in Hoboken on earlier in the program, but we were really getting into it too. Like, it was really interesting. Like, we could have gone like another hour, I think, just chatting about college football and baseball and all that stuff. So it's really been fun. And you know, the two of us, I've always had that dream of us doing like a national, or even just a regular terrestrial radio show. And, you know, even though we have our style of doing things, I really think that it would be receptive. Like, I think people would really get into it, don't you?
I'm in. Three hours a day, 5 days a week.
It wouldn't even be working, man. It would be so much fun to do that. We can take some calls, and instead of having people write in the random questions, we could just like, take them as phone calls, you know? That would be really, really fun. So,
Plus, you got the guys to watch the games, to do the recaps. I always thought that as much as I enjoy the investment segment, I sort of think it would be better closer to the games. Like Wednesday, I'm not really thinking about, I mean, I don't bet anymore, but when I did on Wednesday, I wasn't really thinking about the lines or the spreads and stuff. That would be more of like a Friday kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Usually we would do that. I mean, a lot of programs do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds silly because I'm such an old man compared to you guys. But you know, Friday's when you got paid. You know, Friday's when you got your money. You know, Friday's when you open the paper and look through the lines and you know call the. I know now it's all online and that kind of stuff, so it doesn't really matter. You're just looking for the line that's going to serve your interest the best. But Wednesday, Wednesday is the perfect time for what we do. It's sort of like the middle of the week. You're not really recap. You can recap the what happened last week and look a little forward to, but you're sort of in the middle. You know, you just kind of want to get through the week. Where a Monday show would be great to recap everything. A Friday show would be great for the bettors and what's going on that coming weekend kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just trying to think. You know, it's what's nice about it is that you can use that date to either do something that happened last weekend or you can preview something that's happening this weekend. Today we did both. We actually I was covering the SC right. game, and then we went into, you know, this week's NFL games, which are going to be pretty interesting. And certainly there's a lot going on there. Do you still get paid, like, on a regular schedule, like every Friday? Because some places are different. Like, some people don't get the 1st and the 15th paydays. Like, I don't. I get
our
weird.
Our company's every Thursday.
Oh, Thursday? Any advantages
to that?
Our
company's Thursday.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. I mean, I've never really thought about it. I don't think there's any advantages or disadvantages. That's just the way they pick through their payroll company. That's, like I said, it's not like the old days where you were cashing your check on Friday because there was no such thing as an ATM, so you had to get your money out, you know, so you can have a good weekend. Now it doesn't matter.
Huh, how about that? Interesting stuff. So, if you want a gambling update, I can provide it to you, but I think we had some references to it earlier in the show. But basically, I bet an NBA game tonight, which is the first time I've even attempted that.
Did you?
Yeah.
I missed that part. I've been listening since about 10:45. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was nuts, Junkie. It really was. I mean, first of all, I should have done it last night because there was a point difference between waiting until today and doing it a night before. But basically, when I saw it for the first time, I said it showed that the Pacers were a 6-point favorite at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. And I said, the Knicks are in disarray. I mean, this is a team in the Pacers, I think, that can handle that 6-point spread. But I sat on it. I didn't think about...
6 points, though, in the Garden? That's a lot of points on the road.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, the Knicks are a joke, but that's a lot of points.
Oh, did you think so? Well, you know... As it turns out, you'll see what happens after the fact. But anyway, the point spread went up to 7. And so I went with it. I said, all right, let's see the Pacers win this thing out and maybe put it away at the end. 7 points, maybe they'll win by 8 or 9 or something. Well, the Knicks went off to an 11-0 lead in the beginning of the game. They started off on an 11-0 run. And I'm like, oh, great, it's over. I have no shot. But then I left work and I went home and I followed the rest of the game, and it was just fun. I mean, it wasn't trying to do anything serious there. I mean, just, you know, it's not a huge bet. It just was fun to track it. But the Knicks were starting to pull away. Like, they were up by 3 with like 10 seconds to go. I'm like, ah, dang, that's it. But then once again, I I did what I do, and I said, Knicks fans, you're welcome on the Twitter. And then you know what happens right after that? Paul George gets fouled at the 3-point line. He's like at 86%.
Are you kidding? Are you making it up?
I'm not making it up. Knicks are up by 3.
Now I'm gonna prove my ignorance a little bit. I obviously know who Paul George is, but is he a good 3-point shooter? I don't know that.
I think he's a
Is there a reason to foul him at a or to get that close to him? Is he that? Like, is he Steve Kerr from the 3?
I don't know if he's Steve Kerr, but he is pretty good. It's just that it's bizarre because it was actually kind of a bad call because they barely touched his elbow. He barely touched his elbow. Whoever fouled him, I think it was J.R. Smith, barely touched him. He tapped him on the elbow, and they called that continuation or something. Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough call. Especially
Smith must have went straight. He probably had his little phone in his pocket in his shorts. He probably went straight to Twitter.
Oh yeah. So anyway, the question at that point was whether he was going to make the shots, and he was an 86% free throw shooter, and he made all 3 of the shots, and so it was tied, and they went to overtime, and then in the overtime, the Pacers took over, and they won by 7, and so the line was 7, and so I got a push. That means I get my money back, but I didn't win anything.
They won by 7 in overtime?
Yeah, they won by 7.
What's overtime, like 4 minutes?
5-minute overtime. Knicks scored, I think.
Oh, it's 5 minutes now?
I think they scored
that
4.
That's a bloodbath. And in overtime, 4 minutes, win by 7?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bad job out of me jumping the gun on that game, but it was a very, very interesting affair for sure. Very interesting affair. So my first attempt at betting basketball was really, it was wild, man. It was wild. It's much wilder, I guess, because you know, the scoring can be so volatile. Like, you can go on a 10-0 run, and then you can go without a basket for about 5 minutes, and free throws could decide it at the end. I mean, there's really no set, there's no pattern. In football, there's a little bit of a pattern. You have 7-point scores, long drives, field goals, whatever. But there's no pattern in basketball. So that's why it's tough to really judge. It's like, you just basically have to hope there's a huge blowout when you make that kind of a selection. So you're right. I mean, you when you said right there, oh, 6 points is a lot at the Garden, even if they're bad, and you were absolutely on the money, because for, I would say, 96% of the game, they were not covering that spread. I'm not even kidding. They didn't start leading by at least 7 points until the overtime. I don't think they ever led by that much until they got to the overtime. They were up by 8 briefly, and then they finally won by 7 points. So, you know, I'm just happy to come out of there without losing money. I will just, it wasn't a lot of money, but I just decided to check it out just for fun, see how that went. So don't take a lot of points. Don't give a lot of points when you're playing at the Garden. Is that the adage, Junkman?
Well, yeah, but I mean, even in the old days, the NBA was always the most baffling sport to me to bet. And just the other day, I was looking at the Celtics played, I think, in your neck of the woods, without Pierce, Garnett. I mean, I'm sorry, God, I just called them the Celtics. The Nets. Jesus, I'm an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Without Williams, Garnett, and Pierce, and they only lost by like 4 points. I mean, they lost, which was inevitable, but they had nobody.
Wow. They had nobody, and they ended up winning, and they ended up keeping it that close.
No, they didn't. They lost, but it was just a close game. It was like, you know, the skill level is so close all those nights. I mean, you got 12 guys on every team. Everybody's terrific. I mean, blowouts usually end up, you know, you kind of pick your spot. The team just sort of gives up, or they're playing the third game in 4 days, and they're just exhausted. To me, the NBA is so hard to bet. It's harder than baseball to me. Baseball is easier, I think, than basketball.
No, I think you're right. Like I was saying, I mean, it can change so dramatically and so quickly on a dime. Even it's just so bizarre how those things can fluctuate. So, I mean, I may stay away from that for a while, because that was it was just an experiment, and it was fun, but it was like, man, that was weird. I'm not gonna do that again. I guess that's why football gets bet the most, because it's the one that's the easiest to project an outcome to. I think. I mean, that's the way that it's set up. Junkie, we don't want.
Well, at least to me, basketball is always like, teams never tend to. There's never really a feeling to me like teams are running up the score, trying
right.
to embarrass people. You know, you put the subs in. You know, they're even like, look at the Celtics. The team is terrible, but they've come out and they've shown some life. And the subs, these all, you know, like I said, the rosters are small. The coaches don't seem to be intent like in football, where they want to make a point. Run the score up and embarrass somebody else. It seems like the NBA is always just right on the line, or, you know, so it's so infuriating as a gambler, I'm sure.
I got you for sure. So let's go ahead and accept some questions tonight. Write the word question followed by the question itself. We'd be happy to answer them through the course of the hour. Junkman is with us. And again, my thanks to everybody who participated in Tyler's investments tonight. Tyler himself. Although, again, as we were saying, Tyler, you're going to have to back up those picks. I mean, you've had one winning week so far in like 4 weeks. Let's see some results, and we'll see how it goes from there. Ron in New Jersey as well. John in Connecticut. Andy in Seattle. Otis, obviously, chipping in as well. Lou and Hoboken in our first hour. So let's do some questions. I did have one question for you, Junkie, as we start our random questions feature tonight. And it is this. What is your feel about Steely Dan? What do you think of them? I mean, they are a very interesting musical experiment, so I was curious as to what you thought of them.
I have no opinion on that whatsoever.
Really?
I couldn't even tell you a Steely Dan song if you pointed a gun at my head.
Oh, I think you would know. It's just like, you probably heard them, but you didn't know it was them. Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
Don't Stop Believing.
That's Journey. That's Journey. That is not Steely Dan. Let me think. Hey 16. Dirty Work. I'm trying to think. Some other good ones, though. Let me think.
Let me be straight. I'm aware that there is a band called that, but I have no idea what their songs are.
Oh, okay. So you're not familiar with their music as much?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I can't tell you if they're rock and roll, if they're heavy metal.
Okay.
I think they're probably like,
right.
They're like this kind of like a Steve Miller Band kind of thing.
I wouldn't say that. It's kind of like that's the other thing about it. It's hard to define. It is actually hard to define what they are. Like, they're kind of jazz, fusion, rock, something. Like, it's hard to really say who they are. Hey 19, not 16, sorry. Hey 19, that's from the Gaucho album, their final original album anyway.
Oh, the Gaucho album. Nice. All right. Now you're talking.
I love it. Okay, so here's our first question in random questions tonight. Red or white wine? Do you have a preference?
Red wine. Not close.
Red wine. Stay close to me. Okay. Any particulars that really excite your bone?
No, I just sort of read the descriptions at the store and pick the one that I like.
Okay, so just any red wine will do it?
I'll put it more simple terms. My preference is one that's less than $15.
Oh, okay. You know, if you were out here, a place called Trader Joe's would do you well, because we have a lot of, like, cheap, well, let's not call them cheap, inexpensive wines that are very, very good. So I think it would serve you well,
is
Mr. Judge.
Trader like Ben Franklin is a trader? I mean,
no,
Franklin,
no, no, no,
ben
trader,
Arnold,
like you're trading Arnold things. No, like...
Oh. It's like a barter system.
Yeah, well, you don't literally trading, but I mean, it's just like he's...
You go in there and tell them you can fix their computer and they give you wine? Is that what you do?
I love that. I don't know. I mean, I think of it like a marketplace. There. It's a market. It's a grocery. It's a small, small, like, store.
So, farmer's market?
No, I mean, it's like a real, it's like a regular store. It's like sort of like a grocery store, but smaller. You know what I mean? Specialty foods, including wine and snacks. Yeah. A boutique store, in a sense. Not maybe boutique store, but, you know.
You say boutique?
Yeah.
See, to me, that means expensive, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, then it's not a boutique store, because it's not expensive. It's actually the antithesis of expensive, so... Anyway, we'll go ahead and let's get to our next question. So red wine is a big one for you. Here's your next question.
Yeah.
Who is the MikeFrancesa.com poster of the year?
Oh, wow. The poster of the year. Unfortunately, I'm not on nearly as much as I was in the old days.
Right.
So as far as this year goes, oh, man. I mean... I guess I'll just pick, you know, compared the one or I'd say, but I do go on 3 or 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as people that grab my attention the most or make me laugh, I think, which is kind of what I look for a little bit, I don't know if this guy's popular anymore or if he's still. But that Umberto's Clan House guy always cracks me up, and always kind of, I always read what he posts. Sometimes I just gloss over I read a lot of what people post, but that guy, I always actually intend to read his things, even though sometimes they're totally off the wall.
That's so what I'm makes sure it that, so funny, though.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good choice, actually. Umberto's, big fan. That's a good choice. I like that. That's a good choice, Junk Band. And Bertz, if you're listening tonight, we certainly salute you. And hopefully, I mean, he's funny. That's the funny thing about it. I've met him a few times in person. The guy is definitely really fun to talk to. So I'd be happy to endorse that nomination, Junkie. Very well done. Very well said. I like it. My vote for best poster of the year, I'm going to go to V-Tread, because basically he's consistent. He doesn't have, and he's his own man. And I think that kind of character is important on a message board. I think it's critical that you don't change. If you're going to be a personality, I mean, certainly adapting isn't a terrible idea, but I do like that. I do respect a lot that he has his way and he's always done things his way forever. And I think that's cool. So, he riles everybody up. I think it's a hoot. I try to get back at him sometimes, but obviously it's just in fun. So, V-Tread would be my selection. I don't know if I'm really going to actually literally nominate it, but certainly it would be on the list. Okay. Up next, and Edinburgh's up as well. Next question. Here we go. What do we got for questions, fellas? Question followed by the question itself, and we will answer them in order through the rest of the hour. Is there an NBA game on ESPN right now? Of course, yep. We've got, let's see, we've got Rockets at Mavericks tonight. Mavericks not as good as they used to be, but this could be good. Could be juicy, I think, if things stay close. The Rockets' defense isn't really that great, but they do have some good players. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Next question. Right on down the line. What is your favorite brand of swimwear? Junkman, would you like me to take this one first, and then I'll swing it to you?
Absolutely. I'm only going to ask one other follow-up. This is like if I'm swimming or if I'm watching swimming.
I mean, I guess you could put on swimwear if you watch. That'd be like kind of odd. Do you mean your favorite to see? Like your favorite to, like, to watch on other people, you mean?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What I'm there.
I gotcha. That's an interesting viewpoint. Well, I'll take this straight up as far as favorite swimwear. I mean, there's really no set answer. Because I think you have different needs at different times. Like, for example, when you're actually trying to swim, like, competitively for an actual event, you're probably going to go a Speedo. Because I think that's the best performance swimwear that you'll find anywhere. I mean, there are other brands. There's Tier, there's Arena. But in terms of actually just, like, racing fast, I think Speedo is worthy of the name. It's fast. It's speed. It is really good. So, I mean, that would probably end up being the default answer. But you know, there are different situations. Like, if you're swimming during the day and during practice where speed is not a top priority, then there's a whole lot of answers. Like, you could go Turbo, which is actually a water polo suit company. But they have some pretty wild designs, so I think I like going that way. Lately, I've been a fan of Arena, and Arena actually is one of the legacy brands going through the years. I mean, you will have seen their brand forever in the Olympics, going all the way back to the 70s even. So I'm actually on a bit of an Arena fetish right now, and their swimwear is actually pretty good. It's very durable, and it's very comfortable too. So it's like that's my number two. So Speedo and Arena are both kind of on the list. Okay, what is your response to the question?
My favorite swimwear would have to be a life jacket.
Hey, that's smart. That's a smart answer, right? Life jacket's a good response.
I mean, Dave, I'm not in shape. I'm pretty heavy, you know. I'm sort of like an anchor out there, so I'm putting on a life jacket just so I can bob around and float around. Be safe.
Smart, because I mean, if you wanna survive, you really can't go better with wearing anything than a life jacket. You don't even have to wear pants. If you've got the life jacket, you are gonna survive. You're gonna be in good shape. So, good stuff. Good stuff, Chucky. I like it. What are we looking at here? Next question. Random questions tonight. Write the word question followed by the question itself. We'll answer them in order through the course of the next hour. Let me ask you a quick question, Junkie. Is it a requirement for a pizzeria to have some kind of portrait of Frank Sinatra in order to validate its existence?
God, I hope not.
I mean,
you're
seriously,
probably right.
It's like every one of them I go to, I see something with Frank Sinatra on it. It's like, you know, it's like, guys, we get it. It's New York. It's a pizzeria. But, I mean, you have to rub it in with the Frank Sinatra stuff. I mean, what if you just like pizza? Like, you know, do we have to make it beat around the head that it's the New Yorkian thingamajigger? So I always thought that was amusing.
Yeah. And are they trying to tell us that he he was there one day and he endorsed their pizza? Like, is it a co-signed, you know, Frank Sinatra Corporation you should eat here? Is that what they're telling us?
I know.
We all know. Anyone who's read anything about the guy never gave any sort of interview or endorsement or nod to anything without being paid significantly. You know, notoriously, if you pay the guy, he'll show up and do his act. But I mean, he's not going to just show up and say, "Yeah, eat here. It's cool."
Yeah. No, it's just, and why did we single out Sinatra? I mean, there are other people in the Rat Pack too. How come we don't have ones with Dean Martin in there? You know why? Where's
It's the Italian thing. It's the Italian thing that is what you're. Is
no,
what
I dig that. I understand that. That makes sense to me. I just was thought that was interesting. That I guess it's like he's not Italian enough without him in there. But I mean, I know he likes pizza. I mean, that's a very, very known quantity of the late Frank Sinatra. He was always a fan. But I just thought it was amusing that, you know, like almost every one of these places I go to have something with Frank Sinatra in it. I just thought that was quite interesting, common. And this is true when I was in New York, too. Like, I think I would walk in here and there and I'd see something with him involved in there. So I just thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't mean anything by that, obviously. It's just me joking around. All right, so. Yeah, somebody asked, where's Sammy Davis' Jr. per picture? I agree with that. Like, I would be down with some Sammy Davis Jr. in my pizzeria. Why not? It would be kind of funny. So, all right. Let's go ahead and wait on some more questions. Do you have any questions for me, Junkman? Anything on your mind that you wanted to know?
Oh, well, Sammy Davis was kind of rough to look at, Dave. He was kind of an ugly dude. You know,
well, I understand your point. I mean, I understand what you're coming from with that. All right. Just waiting on a question. Question followed by the question itself. We'll keep answering them in the order they are presented, within reason. See how it goes.
Within reason.
Yeah, because some of them can be a little indecent, you know, just occasionally, like you know, that's why, like, it's like too over the top, you know, indecent or.
I don't remember. Yeah, maybe you just filter those out because I don't remember you asking.
No, that's what I. No, exactly. I don't use them. When it happens, I don't use it. So, that's why I'm careful.
So we can do an outtakes version of all the unfiltered ones. You know, you have to subscribe to the website and pay 99 cents to listen to the the X-rated version. That'd be cool. Dave. That's the way we can raise some money for our 3-hour a day talk show.
I see. I gotcha. Okay, that's an interesting question. I suppose I could ask this. Question in capital letters. Let me sit on
capital
this one
letters.
For a minute. Let me sit on this question for a minute. Just for a second.
Capital letters always kind of scares me. Feels like I'm getting yelled at.
Yeah. Let me ask you a quick question about college basketball. I mean, I know there's not much to tell right now with the season such as it is, but it sounds like your boys at Duke look really good. Have you had a chance to watch them?
I have not, Dave, unfortunately.
Well, let me tell you something.
However, Dave, you will be proud of me to note I did procure a wonderful house-sitting gig last weekend and watch the entire football Sunday. That was fun.
Wow. And there was some interest there.
As you know, I do not have cable in my apartment.
Right. I see. But, you followed through most of that. Now, did they switch your game from whatever it was to the Detroit-Pittsburgh game at some point? Did you see that, too?
Yes, they did? I did get to see the end, and those ridiculous Steelers uniforms, which was just totally as amazing as Roethlisberger was in that fourth quarter. I could not get away from going, what on earth are these morons wearing?
Oh, I know. They were bad uniforms. I agree. They were very, very ugly. They keep using them, too. It's like, man, guys.
It was like a bunch of bumblebees running around.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
It was like a bunch of bumblebees. It was just so ridiculous. I mean,
it looked like the numbers were like sewn on by some old lady. Like it was just very strange.
Yeah,
it was like I know Pittsburgh's falling on hard times with the economy, but it almost kind of looked like, hey, these are what we got today. You guys got to wear these.
Yeah, it's I mean, are they? It's almost like they got punished for something, right? The way that they were
right.
Right?
That's a great way to put it. They were serving a penance for something.
Some unknown infraction we don't know about. It just would have been quite a scene. So anyway, you did see that game. A lot of people by the end of the day were seeing that game. And then in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was like three years ago, the NFL said, listen, we all know that Roethlisberger raped that girl in the bathroom, but we're not going to arrest him. We're not going to find him. But in 3 years from now, you're going to have to wear these horrendous uniforms.
Repeatedly. Oh, boy. Now, what was your feel? What did you think about the 49ers, though? I mean, they got hosed on that call, that neck tackle that was called. Like, they didn't even tackle the neck. It was like the chest. I don't know what the deal was there.
Listen, I'm more. Once the 49ers get a quarterback who actually doesn't throw like a weirdo, I'll worry more about that. But that guy is a complete clown.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. What else to say? I don't know what else to say about that, honestly. Seriously. I mean, the Niners looked like they were playing better than the Saints for a good part of that game. And so, I mean, the Saints won, give them credit, but it just felt like the Niners really handled them very well. And I think if you look at the future, the Niners are actually going to have an edge psychologically on the Saints because they probably feel like, oh, we can handle them anywhere. If we could do that to them on the road, even though they didn't win, who's to say that they're gonna be afraid of him at all once the playoffs arrive, assuming that they meet? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there were a lot of really close, competitive, kind of exciting games on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of Sunday,
and
let's
Monday
go.
Too.
I'm sorry, I wanted to hear what you had to say. I was just interested to know what your point was. What was it you were gonna say, buddy?
No, I just said it on Monday, too. That was a pretty close one.
Oh, yeah. How about that game? How about that call in the end zone? What did you agree with that no call?
Wait, you mean the guy who molested Gronkowski?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I know
yeah.
There's a lot of people out there. No, that was horrendous.
That was bad. You had to call that. I agree.
That was a really, really bad moment, once again, for the NFL referee. That was a really bad, the entire sequence was a bad moment for the NFL.
It just seemed like the game was called way too tightly, and then all of a sudden they didn't call anything at the end of that. It's just the whole thing was badly officiated all the way around. Just the whole game was not well officiated. It's like too much then too little. It's just like they were all over the place, not consistent by any means.
That's a great point, Dave, because really all you want from any official umpires in baseball, you just want it to be consistent from the beginning, from the first play to the last play. You watch as much football as anyone, and what always strikes me is the quarterback drops back and throws to the far sideline, and it's incomplete, and all of a sudden you see a flag and it goes holding, and it was on the opposite sideline. And you're like, okay, well that guy did hold the receiver even though the play wasn't even anywhere close to that guy. But yet that play, for some reason, they picked the flag up. It's just confusing. It's not consistent, which is what I think drives people crazy.
Absolutely. All right, so two remaining questions as we close ourselves out this week. They're both NFL-related. You can see how big the NFL is, even on this show. And here we go. For question number one of two, who will have a better record at the end of the season? Jets?
The Giants.
Or, whoa, okay, so you already have an answer. Jets or Giants? So you're saying, how did you know that was going to be the question?
I don't even know. As we all know, I can't even follow the chat room because I don't know how to get on the stupid computer anymore.
Right.
I don't know. I thought the question was either the Giants or the Cowboys.
But
the Giants, the Jets. I'll still stick with my first instinct. Jets are going to shit the bed. I don't think the Giants are going to have anything better than an 8-8 record, but I think the Jets are in for a rough December.
Well, you know, they have a game at Baltimore, and I think if they're going to be serious about the season, meaning, and by serious, I mean like a run to 500, they win this game. If they have no excuse at this point. I mean, if they really think that they're going to be good enough to compete in the NFL, they got to win. There's no excuse. If they lose by a point or something like that, or they're up by 10 and then they lose, you still lost. I mean, it's pretty much it. So if Geno's going to validate his season, I don't even know if he's going to start, actually, because he was so bad. They actually swapped in a different guy. I think, yeah, I mean, even if they don't, even if, like you said, they fall apart, I mean, it's kind of a gimme year anyway. It's not a huge deal if the Jets don't completely, you know, rebound. So, but basically, you're right. I think some of those road losses are starting to catch up to them. They can't just keep relying on, you know, good wins at home with running the ball all the time, close wins at home. They're going to have to actually put away a team at some point. They kind of did with the Saints, but you know what I mean. It was kind of there's a lot of that going on. So we'll see. I mean, the game against Baltimore will be a showdown game. We'll take a look. We'll see if Baltimore's back in this thing too. Okay. You think the Giants beat the Cowboys? Just quick gun to your head scenario. What do you think?
Yes.
Even if they're coming off a bye, the Cowboys are off a bye. They got like three guys back defensively, as our friend Lou in Hoboken said. But would you still say with the still Giants?
Yes.
All right. I like it. I like the confidence, junk man. I like it. I really like it. Okay. So our final question. Will the Chargers be 4-10 after the next three games?
Well, I don't know who they're playing, Gabe.
Well, the first game of those is going to be against the Chiefs. So they got that one. And then let me show you the rest. All right. Let's take a look at it. Here we go. All right, so no chance there. And then they are going to play Cincinnati at home. So they've got they host.
The next one?
The next one is against the Bengals.
Right. So it's the Chiefs, the Bengals, and who?
The Giants. Your Giants will be the third of those.
Oh, they win one of those games.
Okay. So no, they will win at least one game in the middle of those three. Okay. Great. Well, that about wraps it up. Junkie, thank you very much again for your contributions tonight. It's good to have you on, and I'll work out a system to get the investments thing wrapped up sooner, because it's these things. Like I said, this thing's turning into its own podcast. It's pretty crazy. So I'll really work on that. See what we can do.
You could do an hour, and you can add some things that you could easily do an hour. Those guys are great.
You know, if we have enough material for it, I think maybe next week we'll actually even start it at like 5:30 and then just run with that and see how it goes. Junkie, it's really been a lot of fun, and I really hope that you have a great weekend, and best of luck to everybody over at Max Seafood. It's just been a lot. It's been great. Enjoy it. Have a wonderful
time. One programming note for you and everyone else.
Okay.
Are we doing the Wednesday before Thanksgiving show, or are we switching that out?
90 seconds.
Thanksgiving, in case you weren't aware.
I don't usually do that Wednesday because for travel purposes, I know
that's
people
what I
are.
Thought.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I just thought of that this afternoon.
Oh wow, you're right. So we could do a Tuesday show.
Plus it's like a 15-hour day for me in the store. It's like huge day.
Oh wow. Oh wow.
I don't care about it later. I just might be delirious.
Yeah, no, I dig it. I dig it. Do you want to do a show on, like, Tuesday, maybe?
60 seconds.
Like, maybe Monday or something?
The other side is there's a ton of, you know, there's Thanksgiving Day football.
Right.
College football is kind of...
Yep.
There's some big games. I think Tuesday might be good, but...
Okay. We'll play that by ear. Just in case, we want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving in case we cannot make it next week, but I think we'll negotiate that. We'll keep you up to date. Twitter.com/diningwithdave. We'll let you know. Junkie, thanks for the update. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll catch up soon.
You you guys, man. Later.
All right, buddy. That's Kevin on the Cape. Thanks to everybody who joined us tonight. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time.
Ten seconds.